I'm going to whisper some things to you now about Crunch chocolate bars. Because apparently this whispering thing is a thing that makes you feel things. It's saying something crunchy is coming in the candy wrapper language. Imagine your tongue hiking up those crispy, rocky ridges. Now, drumroll please.
Wow, that's good. Crunchy, munchy chocolate doesn't whisper.
Turn up the fun with Crunch.
This episode is brought to you by PwC. When unprecedented times are all the time, it's time to start walking the talk. Leaders like you turn to PwC to see and stay ahead. Upskill your workforce, use intelligent automation, and transform big ideas into breakthrough reinvention. Explore the human-led, tech-powered solutions that help you reinvent. It's all part of the new equation. Learn more at pwc.com.
Hi everyone and welcome to the 46th episode of Praticamente Inglese. Hope you're doing well, guys. Another week together. I'm very happy about it. Let me switch in Italian as we will have a long interview today. It's a great interview with Maria Cristina Caimotto, which is an assistant professor of English linguistics and translation at the University of Turin. And today she's going to tell us more about her experience as a mum who shares her passion for the English language with her 4-year-old girl. Allora, oggi una bellissima intervista, fra pochissimi minuti iniziamo con Maria Cristina Caimotto, che è una professoressa all'Università di Torino e una ricercatrice. È un ex freelance translator e anche insegnante d'inglese, ma oggi ci parlerà della sua esperienza con sua figlia di 4 anni e di come l'ha fatta diventare bilingue e quindi come addirittura fin da quando era col pancione ha iniziato a parlare inglese con lei e oggi la sua bimba parla un inglese perfetto tanto quanto l'italiano e quindi io gli chiederò tanti consigli su come fare anche per chi ovviamente non conosce bene l'inglese e in generale tanti consigli su quello che potrebbero essere le cose che possano aiutare i nostri figli a imparare l'inglese fin da piccolini. Anche oltre a questo, ovviamente, nella seconda metà dell'intervista gli ho chiesto tanti consigli anche per noi adulti per come migliorare il nostro inglese, quindi una intervista veramente bellissima, ovviamente tutta in inglese. Io in alcuni punti faccio un piccolo recap in italiano, come dire, per rimettere il punto su quello che abbiamo discusso. E prima di iniziare volevo soltanto ricordarvi di seguire Praticamente Inglese nella vostra piattaforma preferita, come sempre, così avete sempre la notifica quando esce il nuovo episodio. In più sull'account Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Patreon se mi volete supportare e su Clubhouse, mi potete contattare su LinkedIn per darmi i vostri feedback che io li apprezzo veramente tantissimo e quindi insomma bando alle ciance come spesso dico, iniziamo con today's interview. I would like to welcome Maria Cristina Caimotto. Hi Maria Cristina.
Hi Mattia.
How's it going? Thanks for being with us today. It's a pleasure.
It's my pleasure. Thanks a lot. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, that's great. When we had a chat, me and you, we said, okay, let's talk about something particular. How to raise a child, kids that straight away are able to speak English, right? So I think there's some sort of technique behind, but I don't know. Do you wanna first of all introduce yourself to the audience?
Thank you. Yes. Well, the reason is that I have a 4-year-old and she is, I can say she is bilingual.
Okay.
But before we start, I'd like to say a couple of things about this. Well, first of all, I'm a researcher in English linguistics. But I used to be a teacher of English as a foreign language before that. What I'm going to say today is not the result of my academic research, which is about critical discourse analysis and the discourses of the environment and sustainability. So you can Google my name and find everything about
okay.
that. but what I'd like to share with you is my experience as a mom who speaks English with her child. And of course, my experience is informed from my, you know, from my knowledge as a linguist, but I'm not an expert in teaching children.
Okay, okay. Yes, and also I'm very interested and I'm very curious myself because I'm trying to do exactly the same thing with my two little one. One is 5 and the other one is 6 years old. And it's difficult because my wife, she speaks just in Italian. And I'm trying to speak in English with them, but just in the evening, let's say. And I'm not talking to them in English all the time. So I don't know if this is good or not. I don't think it's a good thing.
Well, there's another thing we need to say, which is, what do we mean by bilingual? Mm-hmm. Because most people think that a bilingual person is someone who can speak both languages perfectly and in the same, you know, at the same level in the same way. Now, this is something that does not exist.
Okay.
In the world, every person who is bilingual, in the sense that they are fluent in two languages, and there are also people who are multilingual, so they mm-hmm. are fluent in three or more, tend to be fluent. Of course, they have a good knowledge of both languages. Great, obviously, but then they are proficient. You know that there are parts of your life which are in one language and parts of your life which are in another language. Now, I was born in Italy. I was raised in Italian. I spent some time in England, Britain. You know, in English-speaking countries, and of course I did my degree, PhD, and everything in English. My academic English is better than my academic Italian, because I never use Italian in my academic life, you know.
Okay.
For example, another example is, take a woman who was born in an English-speaking country, moves to Italy, and then gets pregnant in Italy, and, you know, delivers her baby in Italy and everything. Her knowledge of everything related to being pregnant and raising a small infant is probably going to be in Italian rather than English, even if she is a native English speaker.
Yeah.
So that's just two examples. You know, it's just the language you speak is related to what you do in life, your identity, your experience, and all that. So, Just you know, to introduce the notion of bilingual.
But let me tell you this. Of course, our audience, the people listening to us right now, 99% of them are Italian.
Yeah.
So they are in Italy. They are living in Italy. And for example, if they want to, you know, give it a try to spend some time with their kids, with their children, to, you know, to let them speak English as well, how, from where they have to start, let's say?
Okay, I think there are two possibilities, basically. And I would tell anyone, please, first of all, do not feel guilty, because I often get, you know, parents of friends of my child say, oh, my English is quite good and I should speak English with my kids as well. And I say, No, because you haven't done it up to now, so you probably don't feel like it, you know. So it, the first question you need to ask is, do I really feel like doing it? And I think if your reason for doing it is, I want to teach my children so they do not have to spend money on courses and all that when they grow up, okay, that is not a good reason.
Of course.
Yeah. Because you will, you know, if you have this feeling that, oh, learning English was difficult for me and I'm still struggling, and you will pass that kind of feeling to them, and that's just not good. On the other hand, if you're in love with the English language and everything English, you know, and you want to share that with them, even if your pronunciation is not perfect, if you can really share the passion for learning languages, then that is absolutely fantastic. So try to figure out what your feelings are and then choose what you want to do.
Yeah.
Of course, I mean, if you want to start from scratch and speak English all the time, a classical method is what we call OPAL. It's one parent, one language. And that means that when they are small babies, I mean, I started when I was pregnant. Because they start hearing sounds when they are in the womb, you know, about 5 months, at the fifth month of pregnancy, they start hearing sounds and they start understanding what kind of sounds, what kind of phonemes they will need. There are studies that show that newborn babies cry in different ways because they start practicing the sounds of the language they're going to speak when they cry. And they
That's
are
quite interesting.
Oh, that's so fascinating. By the age of 6 months, you know, if you listen to a child, to a newborn who is like 1 or 2 weeks, you will hear they make all kinds of sounds. They have all the sounds of all the languages. Mm-hmm. They can make, you know, those very deep sounds in your throat that you hear in Arabic, for example. Okay. By the age of 6 months, they have understood which phonemes they will need and they stop using the ones that they will not need. I find this absolutely fascinating.
What about you said, I mean, that's great. I think it's absolutely, you know, it's so weird to know that, you know, even during the pregnancy, should already start, you know, talking the language you want to.
And also because you need to get used to, you know, if you are an Italian speaker and you, I mean, you probably use English in your working life, but then you don't use it. I mean, don't use it with people in your family, probably. So you need to get used to speaking English all the time with your baby. So I thought, okay, I need to get used to that. And I started doing it with my belly.
So you did like that. So you started talking in English and that's it.
The first 3 years, it was 100% of the time. I mean, every single time. And then you have to figure out what you're going to do in those embarrassing situations where you need to talk to your child, but you need to talk to someone else at the same time, like you're in the playground and your child had just done something wrong and you want to say sorry. So the solution is you're going to speak both languages. So you're going to talk to the child in English and then you're going to say something in Italian, like adesso chiediamo scusa, you know. You need to figure out that you are talking to two people at the same time and you need to
let me tell you this. Of course you are a very skilled person in terms of English, no? What about if I'm not very good at English in general and I want to give some tools to my little one to start understanding English at least? What could be a good practice, let's say?
I have that experience as well because that's what my mum did with me back in the 80s.
Okay.
She's a retired primary school teacher. Mm-hmm. And she started experimenting in the 70s. Think of that.
Wow.
You know, teaching English to kids in the school, which was absolutely out of, you know, so she just invented it because she had to look after them while a part of the class was doing religion. Mm-hmm. And the other ones were just there waiting. And she thought, okay, I'm just to teach some English. And of course, that created some controversy because then the ones who were doing religion wanted to do English as well. And anyway, so what she did with me, she never spoke English with me, but I had toys, videos, things to listen to, all those kind of stuff. Those of you who are like me in your 40s probably remember the Grillo Parlante.
Grillo Parlante, come no, certo.
Yeah, and I had both. I had an Italian one and an English one. I had no idea how she got the English one because Amazon did not exist, but she did.
Today is very easy because, absolutely, you know, if you have an iPad, you have a tablet and you are watching, you know, my kids, they watch, for example, I don't know, Me Contro Te, or they watch to, you know, different cartoons. But if you give them the chance to listen to those cartoons or to those videos, In English, that could be a
that's
big
right.
help.
That's right. That's right. That's one of the main solutions. You have plenty of cartoons, of course. If you have any platform when you watch films and things, and you can switch to English. And you have what I really love is super simple songs, which are songs in English. If they're really prepared for learners of English, and they're extremely simple, they're simplified. You know, they are the traditional English songs for kids, but simplified. Yeah.
So say it again. What we need to
super simple songs.
Super simple songs. Okay, wow. That's the very first tip, practical tip.
Yeah,
that's
yeah, great. Yeah.
Second thing is cartoons in the original language.
Cartoons,
For example, this is my experience, Maria Cristina, Peppa Pig.
Yeah.
Peppa Pig, it's a great, great cartoon.
Fantastic, yeah.
That's in the original language, which is proper British yeah. You know, accent,
yeah.
Let's say,
fantastic.
But it's very, very good, I think. And I also suggested it to also adults that they want to approach to English as
oh,
well.
Yeah. Peppa Pig is great. Another one which was really popular with my child before Peppa Pig was Word Party, which
Word
I think is
party.
Only Word Party.
Word Party, okay.
I think it's a Netflix thing, so you need Netflix for that. And they really teach one word in each episode.
Okay.
So they repeat, they have this thing, they call it Word Wally. Mm-hmm. And each time they don't understand the word, they call Word Wally, and Word Wally comes and teaches them the word. So it's just fantastic for language learning. It's for really, really small kids.
Okay, that could be a great help for parents,
yeah.
No?
Yeah.
Because if you give them the chance to listen to English, like let's say Peppa Pig or any of the cartoons and stuff like that, maybe 1 hour per day or half an hour per day, at least they start, you know, having this English in their ears, right?
Yeah. You just, if they're young enough, you just introduce them to cartoons in English and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
I think my child doesn't know that cartoons also exist in Italian. Sometimes she watches them very rarely in, you know, with some friends in their house. And then when she tries to say, I want to watch it in English, I say, in Italian, I say, no, it doesn't work here.
Okay. You're very straight on that.
True. Sometimes it's true because I have some DVDs that are only in English, for example.
Okay.
So, yeah.
But what about your husband?
He is an Italian speaker. He speaks very little English. So she sometimes translates for him.
Okay.
Because around the age of two, she realized that he would not understand English. And so she started translating. Sometimes he does
that's
that.
Great. So your husband.
Great exercise for her.
He speaks Italian. And you speak English, and that's it.
Everybody else speaks Italian with her.
Of course, because you're in Italy.
Some people understand English, so sometimes, you know, she says something in English and they will understand, like my mom does. So when she's with granny, she calls her granny, even when she speaks Italian, but then she speaks Italian with her. And sometimes the Milanese dialect as well. so she knows who understands English, who doesn't, and all that. Now, another really important thing to do, especially if you are speaking English only like I do, but, you know, in general, if you can, find a local group where, you know, you can, or as I did, if you cannot find it, create one.
Group, un gruppo locale, un gruppo di persone che parlano anche loro e cercano di insegnare ai loro figli l'inglese, giusto?
Exactly. Okay, so before lockdown came, what I did was organizing a meeting every week in the local library.
Mm-hmm.
And so we just sang some songs together, you know, the super simple songs, and read books to them. Well, okay. I started when I actually started before my child was born, just to get people, you know,
to create the community. Yeah, to start creating.
And we also started getting some native speakers.
Okay,
so it was absolutely fantastic. So we had some children who were some of them were only English speakers, you know, because they were maybe 1.5 or 2. And they had been with an English-speaking mum 100% of the time. So their Italian was basically, well, you know, when you're 2, you don't speak very much, but that they didn't know Italian, really. And so that we were mixing them with Italian kids who knew very little English, and they were just getting together, listening to stories, like 2-year-olds do. So maybe they're playing, but in the meantime, you're just talking to them. They will catch everything. It's amazing. You think they're thinking about something completely different. They're playing. They're not even listening to you. And then they actually know.
I do agree with you on that. So great suggestion is to create a local group of people interested to, you know, make sure that their kids, they can catch English at least, you know, because they're, you know, 2 years old. So that's a great, great tip. But also, what do you think about schools? So in general, you know, my experience is my 2 little ones, they do 1 hour per week of English, which I, of course, is not enough. Definitely is not enough. There are also schools, they advertise themselves as bilingual schools. What do you think is it could be a good option for, you know, if me and my wife, if we don't speak English, what can we do in order to, you know, to make sure that my little one, they will start getting English, you know?
If you can afford that,
Of course.
They're private. Most of the time, they're private. You really need to check, because in Italy, it is legal to call your school bilingual, even if the number of hours in English is really, really, really small.
Okay.
So maybe it's not much more than 1 hour. Sometimes they're very serious, and sometimes they get plenty of activities in English, and that's great. But you need to check. You need to make sure. Most schools are, as I say, private, so they are really expensive. It's not necessary, really. It depends on how much. If you have the money, great.
Okay,
If you don't think that your children cannot become bilingual because they will not go to that school, right? So, as I said, you know, I was a child in an Italian school before primary school, secondary, everything. I went abroad when I was 12, but before that, everything was in Italy.
What about faccio un piccolo recap in italiano, perché hai dato dei consigli veramente fantastici, cioè il fatto di dire ok, i cartoni mia figlia non sa che esistano in italiano, e questa è una cosa che possono fare tutti, perché se io ti do un iPad tra virgolette o ti accendo la televisione o ti metto un DVD e sono tutti in inglese, è ovvio che fin dall'inizio tuo figlio o tua figlia avrà quell'abitudine, ok? Uno. Secondo, questa cosa del local group mi è piaciuta tantissimo, cioè organizziamo con dei genitori che sono interessati a far sì che i propri figli imparino l'inglese fin da subito, e ci organizziamo quelle 3, 4, 5, 6, 8 famiglie, quelle che sono, parliamo in inglese, cantiamo in inglese e magari abbiamo anche la fortuna di avere qualche madrelingua che viene con noi, che vive nella nostra città. Poi l'altra cosa sono quella delle canzoni che dicevi, e cartoni animati come Peppa Pig, che io adoro, credo siano fantastici proprio per prendere confidenza con l'inglese, e quindi diciamo già solo questi sono, è ovvio che non tutti hanno la possibilità di sapere bene l'inglese e in mettersi a parlare esclusivamente inglese con i propri figli, ovvio che è una cosa, no? Però sicuramente ci sono dei tools, e il tuo terzo suggerimento è: se hai soldi, ok, vai e iscriviti alla scuola privata, che si, diciamo, tra virgolette, si identificano bilingue, anche se poi in realtà bilingue proprio non sono.
Sometimes they are, sometimes they're not, it depends.
Oh, yeah, it
just
depends,
check. Just check that you're spending your money on what you think.
You spend your money for. In the right way, yeah. Let's say, ok. Però dici, alla fine, non è necessario, perché ci sono dei tools, ci sono delle cose che si possono fare a prescindere dal doverle mandare a scuola di inglese, tra virgolette, bilingua, o al dover io per forza esprimermi in inglese con loro, giusto?
Yeah, yeah. British Council Kids is also fantastic.
British Council Kids.
Kids, okay. Yeah. Totally free. It's the British Council.
Uh-huh.
It's a website. You can download, it's for older children, like I would say from the age of 5 onwards, probably.
Mm-hmm.
So you can download songs and things to color and write and cut and paste and all the kinds of things that kids love. You know, like there is a song that, for example, teaches you the words for jobs, and then you can color the little cards, and then you can play memory with those cards and all these kind of activities.
That's great. What about
everything is free?
What about apps? You know, I don't know if you had any experience before with apps. You know,
not
one
much.
That you need to. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. You need to. There's the dog, and there's I don't know, something else.
Yeah, I guess.
The
dog.
the cat.
I guess they're great. I'm trying to not overload my child with technology.
Yeah,
so I
yeah.
have no direct experience of that. Now the amount of cartoons she watches is 20 minutes up to 30 minutes a day, not more than that.
Mm-hmm.
Another amazing thing I wanted to share is that sometimes she uses expressions that I'm not familiar with, that I never use. And I just think, what was that from? And sometimes I ask her, and she says, from Peppa. Or now she's a passionate fan of Simon. And Simon is a French cartoon, actually. But there is the English version, which is really good. And so she just watches it in English. And
Simon
is. But I'm not recommending that. I'm just saying,
let
them watch what they want to watch.
But in English.
Exactly, exactly. As long as the cartoon exists in English, if it's not, you know, I mean, don't insist on Peppa Pig because it's British original.
You're absolutely right. It doesn't really matter the cartoon itself. What matters is that they get used to listen to those cartoons in English. That's a great, great example.
And you know, when people ask me, you know, people. When they hear me speaking English with them, where are you from? And I say, no, actually, I'm Italian, but I speak English because I'm a linguist, blah, blah, blah. And so, that's great. So you're teaching her. And I say, no, I'm not teaching her. I'm sharing my passion. You know, the thing is, I used to teach kids many years ago. I used to not teach English. I used to play with them. And I was speaking English at the same time. And I fell in love with books by Julia Donaldson and Axel Scheffler, you know, the Gruffalo, Gruffalo's Child,
Gruffalo.
The Broom. You are all familiar with that if you have children. They are, the original is in English, and that's rhyming stories. And the translators did a great job. They did their best, but it's just impossible to get it as good as it is in English.
Yeah, but I always talk about it when we speak about movies, you know, when you listen to Al Pacino in the original, you know, we have in Italy great actors, you know, in general, and they have, you know, great voices, but the original is the original. There is no point.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, I think my child already understands that because she knows, for example, she knows Tiddler, which is Pesciolino, I think, in Italian, by heart. And it's just not as good. It's fantastic. I'm not criticizing the translator. I was a translator myself. I think the translator did a wonderful job with that book. But as you said, the original is the original prize. It's basically a poem, you know. It's really hard to get it right.
This gives me the possibility to ask you, about, you know, what are the most common mistakes for an Italian, that is trying to speak English, you know, something that you have noticed and some tips that you can share to, in general, let's move to adults right now. Mm-hmm. In general, what are the suggestions, the tips to improve the English, the spoken English? Mm. Or, you know, in general, we heard a lot of things about, you know, movies in original with transcriptions, or, you know, someone told me, Davide told me, a friend of mine, you know, you need to find a boyfriend or a girlfriend from England.
That's a good strategy.
That's a great strategy, no? But in general, you know, of course, I'm kidding right now. But in general, what are your suggestions for us?
I think it's really important to work on pronunciation.
Pronunciation.
Because that gives you confidence. You know, I think when you're an Italian or whatever, but we're talking to Italians here, an Italian speaker, and we naturally tend to attach too much importance to how we read, you know, in Italian. Italian is based on syllables. We mm-hmm. read every single letter, basically, when we read.
Yeah.
So when we read English, we tend to do the same. And we really suffer from, you know, silent letters. They're like, why is that letter silent? Like the first time I understood that Worcestershire is called Worcestershire. I was like, you cannot possibly say such a short sound with such a long word. You know, Worcestershire is Worcestershire. Yeah, like, come on. You can't say.
Yeah.
So you need to get rid of that approach. You need to understand that English is based on stress, that some parts of the word, some letters just disappear. They're just not pronounced. Mm-hmm. I think I'm a linguist, so I have the tendency to work on phonemes and work on, you know, sounds, phonetics. You know, when you look up, you look a word up in a dictionary, you see square brackets and funny symbols there, okay? Yep. That's a phonetic transcription. That tells you exactly how that word is pronounced.
In the vocabulary, is just next to the word, right?
Exactly,
next to the word.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, brackets, so, and there is the phonetic in the middle, yeah. Right?
So you can do two things. You can go on BBC Learning English, and if you dig in, you know, somewhere on the website, you will find... or maybe there's also an app nowadays, I don't know. But anyway, you can find a table with all the phonetic symbols. Mm-hmm. And for each symbol, you can click and you get a video with a lady showing you how to move your lips in order to get that sound right.
Mm-hmm.
I used to know two books which were really good. And if I remember well, the first volume, which was the, you know, the easy level, was three or tree. That was the
tre o albero, no?
Yeah, exactly. And the second one probably was ship or sheep, if I remember. Yeah. And there again, for each page, on each page, you have one phoneme and all the difficulties speakers can have with that phoneme, and, you know, like mixing ship and sheep, which is a very common problem for Italians. One thing we need to be aware of is that as Italians, we tend to get all the vowels long. Mm-hmm. So, for example, many people are afraid when they want to say spiaggia, mm-hmm. okay? They're afraid they're going to get it wrong and say
a bad word.
Yes. No, this is never going to happen to an Italian. It's exactly the opposite. We have the other problem, we say pecora when we want to say barca, okay? We tend to get an English speaker wants to laugh at an Italian speaker, they make all the vowels very long because that is how we sound to them. Okay. Our vowels are too long. So we never say bitch when we want to say beach. We say beach when we want to say bitch.
Chiaro. Yeah, no, I understand.
But if you know that, that is your problem as an Italian speaker. And whenever you want to get a vowel short, just make it shorter. It will still be long for an English speaker.
Yeah, you're right. You know, the spreadsheet.
Yeah.
And all those kind of things, you know, that sometimes is kind of the different word, you know, that we pronounce. So first suggestion from your perspective is pronunciation. So please look at the pronunciation, trying to replicate, the terms, the terminology as an English speaker, let's say, or at least try and keep it short on.
And another thing you can do, because another problem that we have, especially if you studied in an ordinary secondary school, Italian secondary school, where you tend to study a lot of grammar and read a lot of things without listening very much, and then you tend to mispronounce some words and you just memorize them with a wrong pronunciation, and then it's really hard to get rid of that mistake, because in your head, you know, that word is pronounced like that and you've been pronouncing it like that for years, and then someone tells you, no, actually it's not like that, but oh no, and it takes a while to get it right. Okay, so one thing you can do is listen to something that has a script, but listen first without the script one time, maybe try to write down some notes. You will probably find out that there are things that you are not able to understand because you are mispronouncing them. And then when you read them, you know, you listen a second time with the script in front of you and you think, oh, that's the way you pronounce that word then. That's why I did not understand it. And that's much more effective than just correcting it somewhat. You know, it's because you actually have the experience of not understanding it, then reading it and realizing that you have been mispronouncing it for years. And then maybe you're going to get right after that.
Quindi questa la voglio dire in italiano, cioè la cosa è, ascoltate l'inglese, poi lo ascoltate con una trascrizione e fate attenzione perché spesso tanti termini in gioventù o comunque in passato li avete ascoltati in un certo modo, ma in realtà sono in un altro e quindi non li capite, non tanto perché non li capite, perché avete avuto l'abitudine di ascoltarli con una pronuncia sbagliata, quindi...
Più che ascoltarli, che se leggi tanto, ma... Non è una cosa, cioè lo leggi e basta, perché magari alle superiori ti hanno fatto leggere i romanzi e tu ti inventi la pronuncia.
Ah, ok.
E te la inventi sbagliata e poi vai avanti così e se nessuno ti corregge...
Continui in quella maniera.
Nella tua testa, anche perché se leggi tanto non lo leggi a qualcuno, lo leggi a te stesso e nella tua testa è sbagliato.
Quindi, diciamo, la pronuncia sicuramente è la cosa da cui bisogna partire. E poi da lì, piano piano, sviscerando tutte le cose, arriva tutto il resto, insomma.
Yeah, I think also because it gives you confidence. You know, if you start working on that, then you the first time you someone tells you, you know, someone thinks that you might be an English speaker, and that gives you such a boost of confidence. That,
yeah.
Wow, I don't sound Italian anymore. Wow.
Yeah, that's great.
That's so good. And then you think, okay, then I can do it. I can do anything after that.
No. It's push you. This push you to, you know, improve yourself and trying to do it better, you know, to speak a better English. What else? For you are a professor, a university professor, right, Maria Cristina? So you have students around you every time. So I don't know if you want to share something that's really helped some of them to level up their English or in general, you know, whatever you think is valuable to share.
Yeah, I'll tell you a story. I'll start from the story. So I had a student in a course many years ago. This was the Faculty of Economics, so English was not a main subject. She had attended every lesson. She was a good student, and they had to pass a letterato test. So that's the test where you test your knowledge of the language. And she came to my office and she said, I didn't pass the test. And it's the fifth time I tried. Okay. So most of the time, the problem with this kind of student was, okay, listen, you need to study on the grammar book rather than just trying the test and you think you're preparing for the exam. But she had come to my office with five grammar books, okay, five of them, and each single page was written. So she had studied an incredible amount. She had dedicated an incredible amount of energy and time. And she started crying.
Of course.
And I was desperate because I thought, what am I going to do? This is not, you know, her problem is not studying. It's obvious. Then I just thought, okay, I don't understand the problem because it's obvious that you have studied. So please do part of the test now here in front of me. Just take the test. I gave her the same test. She had not passed. I was like, do it in front of me. So she did the first five questions. And if I remember, she got four right. So it was not bad at all. It was like 80% good. And then I took her test. I had the original paper and she had only one that was right there. And I said, look, this was 3 days ago. So this is not about the language. This is about anxiety.
Yeah.
You don't touch any book until the next exam. She had another possibility in like 3 weeks' time. I said, do not do anything. Do not touch your books anymore. Just think about what's wrong with your English, which is probably nothing to do with your
preparation.
Exactly. And I told her another story, which is from another student of mine, that this was a lady in her 50s, and she really had a problem with English. Like she had tried a million times. She was my desperate case. She wouldn't listen. After 2 minutes, I was trying to talk to her. She would just go blank and she wasn't paying attention anymore. So I didn't really know what to do. But what happened was that at the same time as she was trying to learn English with me, she was doing a course to become a counselor. So she was getting some counseling with a professional counselor. And she happened to discuss this problem she had with English with the counselor. And they talked about it and they discovered that when she was a child back in, well, the 50s probably, she had been transferred from southern Italy, where she only knew the local dialect, to a small town in Piedmont.
Okay. From south to north.
Yes. At a time when children only spoke the local dialects.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So she was taken at the age of six, I think, to a school where no one understood her and she could not understand anyone. And that was a shock for her. And nobody helped her with this. So she realized that when she was dealing with English, she was getting back to that feeling, which of course had nothing to do with English. You know, it was a psychological issue that she had. When she realized that, she changed completely. Now, I would say her English is about B2. She can give conferences. She's doing a million things in English, and she just got rid of the problem. So the point of all these stories is English, though. No, not English, your language, the language or the languages you speak are deeply rooted and deeply linked to your identity. So sometimes speaking another language can really help you with your personal identity, with your confidence. Many people like studying English or foreign languages when they're teenagers, because when you are a teenager, your identity is growing. You are choosing who you are,
right?
Okay? And speaking another language can help you because you can play another identity. But some other people are scared by this other identity. And they associate all the negative feelings to English, and they start thinking they hate English and they hate foreign languages and cannot get them right and all that. And yeah, if you become aware of all these issues, it's easier to deal with them.
Guarda, questo ti faccio un recap e ti faccio anche un applauso virtuale, perché hai detto una cosa fantastica, cioè è tutto legato alla nostra psicologia. C'è chi c'ha l'ansia, c'è chi ricollega il fatto di non pensa di non parlare bene l'inglese, lo ricollega a qualcosa che è successo nel passato di quando era piccolino, che è stato trasferito dal sud al nord, quindi il dialetto non capiva, eccetera. Bla bla bla. Quindi diciamo che spesso e volentieri è proprio una questione psicologica, è una questione di ansia o cose di questo genere che potrebbero essere sorpassate dal momento in cui lo si capisce, lo si sorpassa. E uh-huh. L'altra cosa bella che mi è piaciuto di quello che ci hai raccontato, di questa storia, è il fatto che, come dire, il fatto di esprimersi in una lingua diversa ti dà anche confidenza, ti dà anche, cioè, prova a spingere la tua identità, perché esci fuori dalla tua comfort zone, della tua lingua, ovviamente originale, e questo uscire in un teenager costruisce ancora di più la propria identità. In altre persone magari invece può creare l'opposto, ma se uno lo sa e lo capisce, lo può, tra virgolette, combattere. Quindi esprimersi in inglese, esprimersi in una lingua diversa da quella di origine, eccetera, eccetera, è comunque anche qualcosa che può aiutarci in generale. Quindi è proprio bello il messaggio. Esprimete, provateci, anche sbatteteci la testa, tra virgolette, uscite là fuori dalla vostra comfort zone e poi sarete liberi, tra virgolette. Quindi spesso le persone sono in quella fase lì che pensano che non sono bravi abbastanza, che la gente può pensare male di loro se si esprimono, eccetera, invece si dovrebbero buttare. Ecco, questo è un po' la grande, giusto, la chiusa, diciamo, di questa bellissima cosa che c'è raccontata.
And I always tell my students, it's like theater. I used to be an amatorial actress. The two things are closely related. Some people, you know, there are people who are really happy to be on a stage. I'm not talking about professionals, of course. I'm talking, you know, the kind of people who go to a summer village, you know, these places where they get you on a stage and say, okay, do something. Yeah. Amuse the public, you know. Some people just panic.
Yeah.
And some people just enjoy it. And the people who enjoy it maybe are not such a great thing for the public, but they are enjoying themselves. Yeah. And some others could be good, but they are just frozen because they don't like being on stage. So speaking another language is a similar situation. You are like, you're thrown on stage and you have to play something different from your own identity. Some people really enjoy it. Some people don't like it at all. But it can be great fun. So for those who don't like it at all,
try to push yourself.
It's really worth trying. You know, really worth trying.
C'è la libertà oltre quell'ostacolo, quindi oltrepassatelo, non fatevi intimorire dal quello che le altre persone pensano o il fatto che pensate di non essere abbastanza bravi. Io pure, cioè, io lo dico a tutta la mia audience fin da quando ho iniziato questo progetto, io non sono un insegnante di inglese, faccio anche tanti tanti errori, però bene o male riesco a dialogare e cerco personaggi e persone di valore come te, Maria Cristina, che invece ci dicano delle cose da un prospetto un pochino più tra virgolette, no, nel tuo caso è proprio accademico, ma in generale consigli su come migliorare, su come, e tu ci hai dato dei consigli fantastici, quindi io di questo ti ringrazio. Thank you very much for being with us today. I also would like to ask you, Maria Cristina, where can we find you? I don't know, in general, you know, are you on LinkedIn? I mean, you're a professor, so I don't know if
general. I'm really happy to share my passion for all things English. So, yeah, you can Google my name and find my my pages on, on the university website. You can find my book, my papers, all my research work if you are interested in that. I published a book last year about discourses of cycling, road users and sustainability, an ecolinguistic investigation.
Okay, wow.
So it's not about learning English, it's something different, but you might be interested in that.
Okay.
Anyway, yeah, then I am on Twitter, where I just share. I do share some things related to linguistics. I am on Facebook, but I don't use it very often.
Okay.
I am on LinkedIn as well, but I just don't. I'm not just reliable.
We just search Maria Cristina Caimotto.
Yeah. I happen to have an unusual name. You know, my surname is not common. So if you just Google my surname, you find
you are the only one.
Yeah, it's amazing. Sometimes I had people writing to me saying, you know, we have the same surname. Are we related? And I thought, yes, actually we are. Because okay. I have some relatives in the States from my grandparents, you know.
Like, for sure you're related to me because it's
But it was true.
Both
related. We had old relatives in common, yeah.
That's great. Thank you very much for being with us. It was a big pleasure for me. I will try to, you know, push myself as well with the English to my little ones because I'm a little bit, how can I say, I'm not committed too much on that and I have to change. So
yeah, feel guilty. Guilty about that. That's the important thing. Just do what you can do. Just do it up to the point you enjoy it.
Okay.
Your kids will learn English anyway. You just send them to a couple of summer camps when they're teenagers. They will fall in love with English. That's it. No worries. They listen to pop music. They will do it. No worries.
Great. So thank you very much. I would like just to remind to the audience that you can find Praticamente Inglese almost everywhere on Facebook, on Twitter, on YouTube, on Telegram, on Clubhouse. We are everywhere. Of course, the weekly episode is going out every Monday. And so I hope you will have a great week ahead. Have a great, great day. And I'll see you in the next episode. Bye-bye, Maria Cristina.
Bye. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.